Abhikshnam,
always.
Sevita,
one should observe.
Niyaman,
minor regulations,
such as cleansing the body.
Madhara,
one who is devoted to me.
Vachi,
as far as possible. Madhavigyam, one who knows me as I am in my personal form. Guru, the spiritual master. Shantam, peaceful. Upasika, one should of many serve. Madatmakam, who is not distant from me. Translation and purpose of divine grace, Shri Parvati. One who has accepted me as the supreme goal of life should strictly observe the scriptural injunctions forbidding sinful activities and, as far as possible, should execute the injunctions prescribing minor regulated principles such as cleanliness. Ultimately, however, one should approach a bona fide spiritual master whose full knowledge of me as I am, who is peaceful, and who by spiritual elevation is not different from me. Purpose. The word Yaman refers to major regulative injunctions necessary for preserving one's purity. In the Krishna consciousness movement, all bona fide members must give up eating meat, fish and eggs, and they must also avoid intoxication, gambling, and illicit sex. The word avigyan indicates that one cannot at any time perform such forbidden activities, even in difficult circumstances. The word niyaman refers to less obligatory injunctions, such as bathing 3 times daily. In certain difficult situations, one may not bathe 3 times daily, yet may still maintain one's spiritual position. But if one engages in sinful, forbidden activities, even in difficult circumstances, there undoubtedly will be a spiritual fall down. Ultimately, as explained in Upadeshamrita, mere adherence to rules and regulations cannot give one spiritual perfection. One must approach a bona fide spiritual master who is mat avigyam, or in full knowledge of the personal form of Godhead. The word mat, me, negates the possibility of a bona fide spiritual master having an impersonal conception of the Absolute Truth. Furthermore, the guru must be in complete control of the senses. Therefore, he is called shanta, or peaceful. Because of being completely surrendered to the mission of the Lord, Such a spiritual master is not atmatan or non-distant from the personality of Godhead. Translation again. One who has accepted me as the supreme goal of life should strictly observe the scriptural injunctions forbidding sinful activities, and as far as possible should execute the injunctions prescribing minor regulated duties such as cleanliness. Ultimately, however, one should approach a bona fide spiritual master who is full in knowledge of me as I am, who is peaceful, and who by his spiritual elevation is not different from me.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Yes, brother, it's the 5th class. The Janta Guru, unfortunately, feels very tired today. So, this verse deals with following Shastra and Guru. So we all know that there's three things we rely on: Shastra, Sadhu, and Guru. And both Sadhu as well as Guru have to be 100% relying on Shastra to be bona fide. So it describes here how there are major regulative principles and minor regulative principles in the Shastras. And the whole purpose of the Shastras is not just to terrify our life, you know, and forbid us everything which is fun.
Mm-hmm.
But the Shastras is actually there to show us that there's a higher aim in life. There's a higher aim in life than just indulging in what the animals have been performing and doing. We were yesterday having a program at Urban Yoga, and there were several guests, and of course the topic of vegetarianism came up again. And it's unbelievable what kind of stupid, sorry to say that, but really stupid arguments people bring forth just to continue with the sinful activities. Ultimately nobody cares.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody cares but for their own sense gratification.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that how quickly people actually give up any other consideration if, you know, their high principles or whatever they've been performing and preaching and, you know, standing on the street and demonstrating for, if that is interfering with their own personal sense gratification. They will find any means and any argument and any reason to justify giving these principles up. So what to speak of somebody who doesn't even have high principles? So yesterday one of the men was saying that that his teeth are like that of a carnivore. And I was saying, like, you know, if you can jump on a cow and bite to its neck and kill it in that way, I think everybody would allow you to eat it, you know. But it is a ridiculous argument because, you know, we can chew our veggies with it pretty much, but nobody's ever going to be able to kill an animal with these teeth. So they were bringing forth all kind of arguments and talking, but ultimately it boils down to the very, very same thing. They just are addicted to the taste of blood, as Srila Prabhupada said. It's just the addiction to sense gratification which makes them totally merciless. Because if we are after our personal sense gratification, guess what? There's no consideration of the welfare of any other entity. Even if we might have ideas of being a great humanitarian, or we love our pets or something like that. But you can see a person that's a non-devotee is going to sacrifice everything for his personal pleasure, and is going to accept everything for his personal pleasure. So these people who are standing on the street, they might do a very good job. Like the other day I was seeing people trying to get collect like signatures for animal protection. But it is just another, there might be some compassion. I mean, I don't want to condemn them or anything. There might be some nice sentiments, there might be some piety, and there might be some compassion in the heart. But usually, unless the person has the knowledge from Krishna consciousness and is a devotee, it is just another label these people put on themselves to get some kind of, how to say, you know, designations they can feel good about. You know, I'm a good person. I'm doing some charity work. But whatever's underneath is not being considered. So the scriptures, they show us that these external designations we put upon ourselves, they're good, and it's good to do good in this world, but ultimately what is the point of it? What can these people really achieve? What can we really achieve if we try to do good to other people in this world? What to speak of those who are totally selfish? That without having the knowledge from the Shastra, why we should do it, why we should be a vegetarian, why we should not eat meat, why we should perform, you know, welfare activities, and what is the kind of welfare activities, all of it won't have any impact on humanity. For example, unless people who are addicted to sense gratification understand the real purpose of controlling themselves and changing their attitude, they might change a particular part of their life, which is good. You know, for example, they could be a vegetarian. They might, if there's some goodness in them, some piety and some compassion, you might convince them to be a vegetarian, and they might even drop this part of the selfishness. But even then, unless there's Krishna consciousness, what does it really add to the world, and what does it really add to their life? They will commit less sinful activities, but things have to be seen in perspective. Srila Prabhupada said, which example did he give?
Even
monkeys. Are monkeys actually vegetarian? Okay. So okay, even monkeys are vegetarian. But with Krishna consciousness, we can understand that there's just this single item. He speaks about major. What was it here? Major regulated injunctions. Just this one item, giving up eating meat, has so much impact. And we see it is just an idea, and then we put it in perspective with reality. And it's this one little thing which is mentioned in the Shastra has such an incredible input on reality. So we can see how all-knowing Shastra is. How amazing Shastra is actually rooted in our everyday life. So you can see economic situation, water shortage, land exploitation, the sewage goes all into our the water and everything. Then the ozone layer is being destroyed, global warming. Like so many things. So you can see how all-knowing Shastra is. It just mentions this one single point, and now scientists, they consider themselves so incredibly smart because they figure all these things out. But we know it since forever, because Krishna has his reasons for putting all these things into the scriptures. So this is just this one item where people might have this realization and might change their life, but they don't actually know the whole full impact on what actually this one rule which is given in the Shastra, because Shastra is all-knowing, and they can integrate it into their life, and they see what this one single item, what kind of impact that would have on the world. The other thing is mentioned here, like intoxication, like everybody's well aware of it, gambling and illicit sex. Like we can see when we go out on the street, we can see these young people, these children. Now that, like now we can see there's hardly any piety in which children were conceived. So you, like you know, being a lot in the city, like you can see it is like it's so incredibly animalistic. You know how they hook up onto each other. The other day I actually was shocked. I think that was the youngest couple I've ever seen in my life. The boy looked like he hasn't even reached puberty. Like, he honestly, I don't even know if he was a teenager, but he was hugging this girl. Like, he looked so incredibly young. It was like the youngest couple, honestly, I've ever seen in my life. So, and you can see that all these children, because they were conceived out of an, you know, impulse connection, their whole consciousness is, you know, maybe not demoniac, but is certainly not very God conscious. And you can see what they're doing with the world, you can see how self-destructive they are. They're so self-destructive, there's no respect for themselves, nor the respect for anybody else. You know, they just do their thing on the street, and they go along with each other as long as they, you know, kind of, as long as they can get some kind of enjoyment out of each other, and then it's over. And they, you know, they destroy, as you can see, they drink, they're just sitting on the ground. I've noticed that so much, like, there's like a whole crowd of kids just sitting in the filth on the street with, like, you know, holes everywhere in their body, like piercings and tattoos and like ripped clothes and like men and women and like all mingled all over together, you know. So it's very sad. And you see another thing that is mentioned in the scriptures, but what impact does it have on the world? Honestly, what impact does it have? Like all human beings basically will be born into these conditions in the future. And it's going to be worse because those kids you see now on the street, you know, a lot of these girls are just going to be randomly pregnant. And a lot of them are going to do abortions. What's going to happen to these children who've been aborted? They're going to come back. And what kind of conditions are they going to come back? What is happening to a child which is from the very point of conception not wanted? What is with a child who's been born of a mother who's maybe like 15, 16, not wanted? What value will this kind of child add to the world? And this is the kind of population the world is going to be filled with more and more. And it's going to go that way. And again, it's mentioned in the Shastra. You know, don't have illicit sex, because this is what you get when you do these kind of activities. But people are totally blind to it, because they don't want to listen. And again, because it interferes with their sense gratification. So we accept according to what pleases our senses, and we reject what displeases our senses. So Shastra obviously is displeasing our senses, it looks like. Mm-hmm. Because we want these things. Like the animal propensity in us wants that. Like Shri Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, he says that, you know, lust, he says it in the third verse, to when Arjuna inquires from him, you know, by what is the living entity and tells his sinful activities, even though I'm willing. So and Krishna explains Kama Isha Kodosha Samyada Yitra Mahashana Mahapatma Vidina Miyavarina. He said it's lust only. It's lust only by which the living entity acts in such a sinful way. So in the purport, Shri Prabhupada explains that this lust, which is seated in the body, and it gets vented through the senses. It's quite powerful if you really think about it. This lust is like kind of, you know, trapped in our body. It's right in here. and we just let it out through the senses. And you can see how people leash onto the sense objects. So this is the animal's propensity which we have, and this is what, you know, the animal likes to do. It just likes to grab its sense objects and exploit them. And Shastra says, Shastra says that's not the way to do it. You know, you gotta stop it, because ultimately it's destroying you and everything around you. So therefore a lot of people are not inclined to take it on board. They might even see the value in it, but still they don't want to act upon it. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that among thousands of men one may endeavor for perfection, and of those who have attained perfection are the one noting in truth. That's very incredible, because all these people who are sitting right here in this classroom are one of these thousands of, among thousands of people who actually are interested in genuine spiritual life, who are not interested just into talking about stuff, but who are actually interested in working on themselves and giving up these things we naturally, like physically naturally, are so attracted to. So the minor regulations I mentioned here as well, the major regulations I mentioned here, and then Srila Prabhupada comes to the point of accepting a spiritual master. And that's a really interesting one. I just wanted to quickly mention that I've been looking into like a person. I was thinking about using it for some workshops at Urban Yoga. And she is it's called a medical intuitive. That means basically she's like a psychic kind of healer, that she can like see the energy system in an actually quite incredible way. And she's very religious. She grew up till she was 29. She was studying theology in a monastery amongst nuns. So all the people who were teaching her were nuns. And then in a study that she's comparing the seven chakras with the seven sacraments of Catholicism, and from Kabbalah, the tree of life. And so she's going through these different levels of power, how she explains it, because in these different departments, so to say, in our subtle body, different issues are related. So she's going from the base chakra, which is basically the tribal chakra, which just deals with our tribe, basically. She's going up to the crown chakra. And she was explaining in a very amazing way how whereas we have to deal with all this kind of stuff and sort out, you know, what has been, how we can purify ourselves, basically, from all these impurities which we've been collecting in our subtle body. And she's explaining how truth actually is the way to happiness. And so she explains that the crown chakra actually is beyond us. Through the crown chakra, we receive blessings. And this is so interesting, because the guru comes into the play. Because through the crown chakra, she explains it as kind of that, that shouldn't sound new age, but she was saying like the crown chakra is basically our subtle link to divinity. And she says this link is mainly established through receiving grace or blessings. So we can see how from that connection, this is really where the spiritual master kicks in. Because how can we know ourselves, how can we connect with the Supreme Lord unless we please our Guru? And if our Guru is pleased, he recommends us. So he actually, through our mercy, through our submission, our inquiry, he establishes the link with the Supreme Lord for us. And all we can do is try our very best and confront whatever we receive on, you know, whatever impurities we have, you know, work on our japa, try to avoid offending the devotees, you know, following the major principles, the major regulations, and the minor regulations, of course. So, yeah. So, something for us to, I think, really digest, because being in the material world and thinking of ourselves to be the supreme controller, we can see that actually, you know, we can't even control, Vimala Mandir was saying that the other day, we can't even control our body, we can't even control our bowels, we can't even control anything in our own personal life. We can, though, work on becoming better devotees by following the scriptures and cleansing out ourselves. But ultimately, the whole point of our spiritual life is that we please through our activities the spiritual master. And that is the actual connection we can make with Krishna. All we do basically is work towards this goal that our spiritual master satisfies. And this is the point where spiritual life really happens. So I'm going to stop here. So anybody wants to make a comment, ask a question, or yes, please.
You have very rightly pointed out, people are mad after eating meat.
Mm.
They just want sense gratification, nothing else. And Mahaprabhu is not going to be pleased at all by those activities. What Srila Prabhupada says that we have to have Naam Ruchi, means taste of the holy name, and give Daya, means we have to see that we have to have full compassion for all living beings.
Yeah.
So they are completely opposite. So
yeah.
What you are saying is very important.
But we also need to have compassion for meat eaters, you know? You know,
no compassion at all.
Well, you're not Nityananda, was very, very merciful, you know?
Yeah, just running like dogs and cats. What Prabhupada said.
I tell you what, like I'm pretty much also still running like cats and dogs, but I've been running like cats and dogs like anything, you know.
Right.
And some other, I came here as well, and so there's hope for everyone. That's the special mercy we receive in this age of Kali.
When they eat meat, they have no mercy or compassion. Prabhupada said that. If you eat meat, you can't have any compassion, mercy on anybody.
Still, Srila Prabhupada also said that most of the people are innocent, you know. Just like, what can you do when you grow up? Like, you know, for myself, like meat was a total normal thing, you know. This is just what's on the plate, you know, this is just what we eat.
That's why Prabhupada spent so much time writing books. He spread Krishna around the world. 14 times he went around, 13 years.
To deliver the Yavana.
Same compassion he had for everyone.
Yeah. Srila Prabhupada said the main quality of a preacher is to have compassion. Without compassion, what do? When we go out on the street, we just want to tell everybody how great we are. If we don't have compassion, this is all we do.
They're very selfish, as you said. We're most selfish. Most selfish. The people on the street, they are very selfish. They are interested only in gratifying their senses.
Yeah, so now we have to look, how much are we interested in gratifying our senses? How much of our activities in the day is actually meant for Krishna? And how much is meant for ourselves? And even if you do something for Krishna, look deep and you'll see it's actually meant for you. You know, like honest, like to be, like just really honest with yourself. If we do something, how much is in it for me? Do we do anything in a day which is totally, there's nothing, like absolutely nothing into it, in it for me? Mm-hmm. Anybody else?
You tell them so many things about not smoking. But they still want to smoke. There are some very nice drugs that come up. If you take those things, within a month you can stop smoking. Even the chain smokers can give it up. But they don't have to heal it. They say, no, I'm all right.
You tell them, Mahaprabhu. Thank you very much. And a very warm welcome to Master Priya Madhavi and Shyam Sundara back in Melbourne.
Haribo!
Thank you for coming back.
Welcome.
Shri Prabhupada.